From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. Soldiers coming home may find it tough to make the transition from the front lines to the line at the Walmart. They've seen and done things which most people in this country will never experience. Some suffer from mild depression, others significant psychiatric problems. Some troubled servicemen who returned to Fort Bragg from Afghanistan in 2002 ended up murdering their wives. To help soldiers adjust to life back in the United States, the Army has put in place a new program. Elise Spiegel reports.
The first time Chaplain Gary Mock got the million-dollar question was over a dinner plate shortly after he came back from Vietnam. The woman who asked was a fellow graduate student, and she didn't pause or stammer. For her, it was just part of a casual conversation. Where do you come from? What does your father do? How long were you over there?
Have you killed anybody? That's called the million-dollar question. It's a question that we find rather strange for people to ask.
The question was less disturbing the second time Mock got it, from a small boy in Lexington, Massachusetts, and eventually the shock wore off completely. But 30 years later, the million-dollar question continues to appear in Chaplain Mock's life, albeit in a very different context. His job is to counsel the returning soldiers at Georgia's Fort Stewart Army Base. Many young men who are facing the million-dollar question for the very first time. Now, to kill, even in the context of war, is a psychologically complicated act. Some soldiers arrive at Chaplain Mock's door in tears, haunted by the images of the men that they killed. And then there are the soldiers who come to visit Chaplain Mock because they're spooked for another reason.
I've heard some people who have come back, soldiers who have come back, and said they enjoyed it. Actually have enjoyed killing. It's a strange feeling of power, and it's just one of those experiences that comes with war. Now, when they come back, how do they deal with that?
How do they deal with that? How do they deal with the flashbacks, the nightmares, or, for that matter, the renewal of sexual relations with their wives? How do they comfort the 3-year-old who pulls away because he can't recognize his own father? For the first time in its history, the Army is attempting to address these questions in a systematic way. The Deployment Cycle Support Program, put in place in May, mandates all kinds of mental health evaluations and programs to help soldiers transition from war. There's reunion training for soldiers in theater and psychological assessments when they return, suicide awareness classes, even counseling for military families. Chaplain Mock recently taught one of these reintegration classes for 200 or so recent returns at a large theater in Fort Stewart. Looking out over the room of 20-year-olds, he started where he himself began.
Has anybody been asked the million-dollar question yet? I couldn't believe it when I got back.
The soldiers have been back for less than a week, and most are still in the honeymoon period, happy simply to see their families and sleep in a soft bed. But for some, problems will emerge. Anger, depression, and particularly problems in their marriage. Chaplain Mock passes around stacks of worksheets.
This is called a marriage snapshot. What I'd like for you to do is when you get back to your unit, take the test.
My spouse criticizes my opinions, never, occasionally, frequently. My spouse views my actions negatively, never, occasionally, frequently. Each item on the 2-page questionnaire is assigned points. Clear numbers, which when scored, will help the soldiers to understand the strength of their relationships. After passing out the forms, Mock turns to another topic near to the hearts of military men everywhere, alcohol. He tells the soldiers that recently he got a call from a commander who asked him to come to the barracks right away. There he found a young man teetering at the edge of the curb.
And so we went inside and I said, you been drinking? He said, I had a couple. Well, an hour and 45 minutes into the counseling session, we'd built up a trust level, and I said to him, I said, now really, how much did you have to drink? He said, well, I had a bottle of Jim Beam and 7 beers. That young man was really hurting inside from what had happened in Iraq, things that had happened, the killings that had taken place. And he was trying to make the hurt go away with alcohol. And it will, till the next day.
Now, it's too early to know how many of the men sitting in this room will experience significant psychiatric problems. It's estimated that about 30% of the people who fought in Vietnam have suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. In the last Gulf War, that number was significantly smaller. Estimates range from about 2 to 12%. But even though it's impossible to know how many of these men will suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, it's not too early to see that Iraq has changed them. Specialist Roger Lint is a thin 21-year-old with huge blue eyes who looks more like a poet than a soldier. In his unit, he was known as the man to talk to, a smart guy who got along with everyone. And while Lint doesn't think that the war has altered his basic character, he does feel the experience has changed him.
I'm definitely a lot more combative than I was, a lot more aggressive, you know, because over there we were the law. Anything we said went, you know, whether they liked it or not. Basically, we treated them like animals. You know, that's how we had to treat them, you know, because they're used to a dictator, so they only respond by a show of force. That's the only way you can tell them anything. You can shout at them, turn around, go away, but they're not going to listen to you till you point a 50 cal at them, you know? And suddenly you view yourself as the master, you know?
Now that he's back in the States, Specialist Lint finds this attitude difficult to shake.
It's just, you get so used to, you know, forcing them to do something, and you come back, and it's the same thing all over again. Somebody does the wrong thing, your initial response is, you know, force them to do it. I've had that impulse a few times. I know I accidentally shoved a few people during the reunion.
A tall soldier who asked not to be identified said more or less the same thing, that whenever they were challenged in Iraq, they used force, snatched them the hell up, is how he phrased it, and that this impulse keeps surfacing even when he doesn't want it to.
Last night, you know what I'm saying, Blockbuster, you know, just some this lady got smart with me, you know, and I wanted to reach for it, you know what I'm saying, snatch her the hell up, you know.
Even more than Specialist Lint, the soldier has found it difficult to adjust. He's experienced flashbacks, he's easily startled, and then there are the problems with his wife.
First night it was lovely, you know, we stayed up all night dancing, chilling, and every day after that, you know, I just felt something was wrong, you know, because she wasn't acting the way that I'd expected. I was sitting like 3 feet away from her, it still felt like I was thousands of miles away, you know.
Finally, it got so bad, the soldier decided to confront her.
I started asking her questions, you know, yes and no answers, you know what I'm saying? And she said no to something different than the way she did the other ones, and I was like, okay.
His wife admitted that she'd cheated on him. As we talk, the soldier's leg jiggles up and down like the engine on a motorcycle. He says he can't sleep and isn't eating, that sometimes he feels so crazy he nearly comes out of his skin.
To the point when I'm saying my hands get like this, so I heard run in the kitchen, take a couple shots. Not too many, I don't want to get drunk like this, it'll be problems. Just enough to calm me down. I smoke about 10 cigarettes, you know, like 10 minutes.
Despite the fact that he's clearly struggling, the soldier doesn't want to see a military psychiatrist.
I'm sure other people probably need to go see a head doctor or something, but not me. I don't know. Ain't nothing wrong with my, well, might be, but I don't think they have anything to tell me.
You hear a hesitation to seek services from a lot of these men. And the truth is that while the Army is trying hard to bring mental health programs to its servicemen, psychiatry and the military are fundamentally uneasy bedfellows. The culture of the military is a warrior culture. Strength, both physical and mental, are among the most important attributes a soldier can have, which is part of the reason that people with any kind of military ambition steer clear of mental health services. Rose Mullis is a clinical social worker at Fort Stewart.
The perception is that it impacts negatively on your career. And because it's that perception, people are reluctant to seek assistance.
And people are reluctant to seek assistance for good reason. A social worker like Mullis serves two masters. On the one hand, her job is to care for the individual soldier. But she also has a responsibility to the military as an organization. And in reality, mental instability can have serious consequences on the battlefield. Someone unable to cope with stress can endanger not only their own lives, but the lives of others, which is why when Mullis sees someone struggling, part of her job is to evaluate whether or not the soldier should be reported to a commanding officer.
Well, it depends on what the difficulty is. If you have a true psychiatric impairment as a result of that, then you will no longer be able to possibly be able to function.
And the world of mental health within the military differs from the world of civilian mental health in other ways. For instance, as a mental health professional at Fort Stewart, Mullis usually avoids certain language, phrases like post-traumatic stress disorder, because she doesn't want to give the soldiers a label that might encourage them to think of themselves as sick.
If I tell you today, gee whiz, you feel okay? you don't look so good. And then you walk out and somebody else tell you you don't look so good. Then you start thinking, maybe I don't feel so good, you know? Reinforcing to people that they're sick, they're going to be sick.
Post-traumatic stress disorder is, of course, a sensitive issue for the military. After the Vietnam War, there was enormous conflict between veterans who claimed the symptoms they were experiencing were a result of the stress of combat and military psychiatrists who believed that the psychiatric problems were character disorders, that is, that these people would have been sick whether they went to war or not, an idea which is no longer official military policy, but which continues to exist. Again, Rose Mullis.
Everybody who comes back and says, oh, it was rough and I had such a hard time, didn't necessarily go over there all okay. Those people had difficulties before they ever left.
Not everybody feels this way. Chaplain Larry Sharp recently came back from Iraq with the 3rd Infantry Division.
I've seen some very strong people that I thought could handle almost anything break down and cry. Same time, someone that you least expected, and everybody else said that's going to be the weak person, the weak link, ended up being the hero of the battle. So I can't make that assumption.
According to Chaplain Sharp, a mental disease is not necessarily a death sentence for a military career.
If you've got a good soldier who does his job and everybody knows he does his job, I've seen just the opposite take place, where the command goes out of its way to make sure this soldier gets the help that he needs.
Like mental health officers, chaplains like Sharp are responsible for the emotional well-being of the men. Unlike a mental health officer, Sharp maintains confidentiality even when he personally feels that a soldier is a serious risk. And when people are in a real crisis, he's not one to stand by the letter of military procedure.
If they feel that it's threatened by going through the official system, then I have no qualms about offering other alternatives or ways in which they can get help.
Have men expressed that to you?
Yes.
They're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
6 months from now, maybe a year, we'll know more about whether the new program put in place by the Army has had any effect, whether they've been able to convince the soldiers that they're trying to help, that using these services is safe. In the meantime, someone like the soldier whose wife cheated on him while he was away in Iraq comforts himself the best way he knows how.
Play my little girl. She loves the hell out of her daddy, you know.
Is that helpful?
Hell yeah. That's the only thing that's stopping me from going crazy, I guess. Yeah.
For NPR News, this is Elise Spiegel in Washington.